Okay, yeah. Genesis 1. Okay, a lot of times when you look at some things, you try to look at, usually boil it down to two different choices. And so just give people the choice and let them decide and present pros and cons on both sides. And so that's what I will try to do, trying to be faithful to the scriptures, but allowing people the liberty to believe what they're fully persuaded with. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand this, help us to enjoy the word, and help us to consider evidence, and help us to consider the scriptures, and be faithful to your words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, a quick review. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Okay, it's not mentioned here, but in the cross references, he also has Lucifer created the angels and water. Okay, the Proverbs 8 and other places on that. So, God created heaven and the earth. It looks like Lucifer was like the second man in command. And the earth was without form and void. So we went through that idea of the gap where multiple places in the Bible, the gap might be 2,000 years. Okay, so that's about your limit. Darkness is upon the face of the deep. So that's a judgment. Okay, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, okay? Science shows us and teaches us that water is always level, or it seeks its level. That's just a law of science. Now, I'm going to skip the first day and go down to verse 6 because it continues the water section, the water idea. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and it let it divide the waters from the waters. So you have a firmament. Okay, this is the idea. You have a firmament, and there's water above, water below. Now remember that water is liquid, vapor, and solid. So in the air, water is humidity. Okay, and so that's important to get to distinguish. And God made the firmament, divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the first day. Okay, so if we have a visual picture, and if the men of the past taught this as the Hebrews taught this, I showed you pictures on a thing. But something like this, okay, where the frisbee, when I held it up and I asked what shape this is, everybody agreed it was a circle. And I held up a basketball and everybody said it was a sphere. Okay, so in Isaiah 40, verse 22, he sits on a circle of the earth. But then in the second half of that verse, he stretches the heavens out, the heaven out as a tent. And in Genesis 1:8, he called the firmament heaven. So if we can think of that, is this a possible explanation where the glass dome, the earth there, and the upturned edge would be 100 to 300 feet high ice wall around the circle that maintains the water. And then the Bible talks about pillars. I got those plastic ones out of the kids' room. And then dungeons or prisons, it says underneath there. And in the Old Testament, Abraham's bosom. So in the bottom of it, okay, it's not just a goofy disc that the Flat Earth Society says it's moving upwards, okay? And so the choices that we've all been taught the sphere turning 1,000 miles an hour, traveling 66,600 miles an hour around the sun traveling almost 500,000 miles an hour through the galaxies, and then our galaxy traveling 1.2 million miles per hour. Okay, so that's what the heliocentric model is. And We've all been taught that, and so we tend to think, wow, everybody's taught that for 6,000 years, but that isn't true. Okay, and so the alternative would be this route, okay, and the glass dome firmament. I want to look at that idea of the firmament today, but if you read through the 6 days, do you remember there's a phrase when you go through the 6 days? It was good. Read day two again. So day three, it was good. Day one, it was good. Day four, it was good. Day five, it was good. Day six, it was very good. That's when man came into being. Very good. Day two, it was so. What did something happen that day? Did something happen that day? So now the oldest book in the Bible that's closest to the flood is Job, okay? New converts would say Job. That book of Job, I really like that one, okay? So let's go to Job and see if we can find something similar to that. Job 26. Job 26. So I have a lot of videos. I'm not sure how far we're going to go into this. I don't want to drag something out and bore people to death, but I don't want to, you know, I just want to give you enough info that whatever. Okay, Job 26, I find it interesting, in verse 13, a crooked serpent shows up. 26, 2 times 13, verse 13. Okay, but look at the context of Job 26. Okay, now, verse 7 is probably the one verse that would give the globe theory some credence, where he says, he stretcheth out the north over the empty place and hangeth the earth upon nothing. Okay, so there's one for the possible on the globe side. Now, it's interesting, he stretcheth out the north over the empty place. It's like the north or the north pole has something very unusual, and the Admiral Byrd gets into that, and I don't know what I think on that. But then in verse 8, he bindeth up the waters in his thick clouds, and the cloud is not rent under them. He holdeth back the face of his throne. Remember, his throne is above the firmament, Ezekiel 1. Spreadeth his cloud upon it. He compassed, to go around, compassed the waters with bounds or boundaries. So that's where I showed a picture of the ice wall. Is that a possibility? Until the day and night come to an end. Day and night, that would be day one, where he established day and night. The pillars of heaven tremble. So heaven's got pillars. Maybe that's on that firm, I don't know. And are astonished at his doctrine. He divideth the sea with his power. So on day two, he separated the waters. On day two, where the firmament is a divider between the waters. And we're dealing with compass waters. We're dealing with the dividing of the sea with his power. And by his understanding, he smiteth through the proud. By his spirit, he hath garnished the heavens. So because of the firmament, we divide the heavens, 1, 2, 3 heavens. His hand formed the crooked serpent. Okay, so the idea here is that on day two, what happened? It looks like, if we're in the right context, okay, he took Lucifer, because he was created as Lucifer. And on day two, because of sin, because of pride, he devolved Lucifer to Leviathan. Okay, and that's the crooked serpent. Okay, that's the idea that seems to be going on here. And it's interesting that the word firmament is also within that idea. Okay, so if that's the case, okay, now, the think about Leviathan. Okay, if you would, try Job 41. Leviathan is a fun little word to write Christian colleges and ask them, what is it? It's amazing how they don't know. few years ago, when I taught the junior high and high school class, and it was called Lowell Baptist School then, and I had the kids write these colleges and ask them questions about the Bible. I had three or four questions. One was Leviathan. One got it right. PBI, Brian Donovan. Okay. And so, whale, hippopotamus, fire-breathing dragon, fire bug. Okay, well, Maranatha Baptist Bible College in Wisconsin said it was a bug that can shoot flames out where it's in the, and there is a bug that does this. And we had somebody from Maranatha Baptist Bible School present their school to the students. So we had them up here. And I'm sitting here listening to it. So I said, oh, okay, I'm kind of bored. I went to my office. And when I went to my office about 15, Debbie, you remember that? And all of a sudden, three or four guys come running. Oh, you missed it. You couldn't believe what just happened. And I said, what happened? Well, we asked him who Leviathan was. And he said, you know, we had somebody write us and ask us who Leviathan was. And they said, yeah, it was us. And they said his face went down like this, and he was out that door in like 60 seconds. And what is Leviathan? That is so easy if we believe the words. Okay, so Job 41 appears to be the natural description of what Lucifer was devolved to. Leviathan. Okay, now, the word is pretty easy to define in the Bible because it's only found in four verses. So all you got to do is run four verses, and I'm only going to run one because one is good enough. So we see Leviathan in Job 41. Canst thou draw Leviathan with a hook? Now, at the end of the chapter, man, it's kind of obvious. He says he is the king of the children of pride. I didn't know an elephant was. Or a whale, or a fire-breathing bug, or a dinosaur. But a person can have a preconceived idea and miss it. Isaiah 27:1. Any sixth grader, any third grader who believes these words know who Leviathan is. Isaiah 27:1. In that day, the Lord with his strong and great and strong sword shall punish Moby Dick, the whale, a bug. No, Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, he shall slay the dragon that's in the sea. Wow, man, that's obvious. Okay, now, if you go back to Job 41, it says, who dares stand in front of him? So if the devil showed up like Leviathan to you and I, we all would know who it is. We would be scared to death. I'm out of here. I'm passing out. Gone. So he doesn't do that. How does he appear? Okay, in 2 Corinthians 11, it says, and no marvel, for Satan himself appears as an angel of light. Okay, they call in natural world, they call that shape-shifting. So if the devil walked in this room, he would be, ladies, he'd probably be, you know, the second most handsome man in the world. Obviously, the husband's your first, but the second most handsome man you ever see. Debonair. Now, that I know that's true. Okay, because we'll go to Isaiah 14. So Isaiah, anybody that teaches angelology, demonology, that describe the devil, they go to Isaiah 14, they're correct. Ezekiel 28, and they're correct. So Isaiah 14:12. Okay, Isaiah 14:12. Let's see what Leviathan or Lucifer, at the time Lucifer, has an interest in doing. What is his motivating, driving force? Isaiah 14:12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou that cut down? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, Okay, count them. I will ascend into heaven. So heaven, firmament. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. God's throne is above the firmament. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation, the sides of the north, heavens in the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High. Five I wills. Really a positive thinker. Five of them. Okay, so this is Lucifer, but yet they're in a tribulation. This is at the end of the tribulation where he's thrown into hell, verse 15. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell to the sides of the pit. That will be Revelation 20. Notice people's reaction when they saw this. 16. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake the kingdoms? Man? Leviathan, Lucifer? That's not going to work, so he appears as an angel of light. But what was his interest? His driving force was to get above the firmament and get on the throne of God. He's desiring to go up. Now, I find it interesting. Five I wills. Let's look in Ezekiel 28, the other passage. Now, the idea of Lucifer or Leviathan, either way you want to go on it, appears as an angel of light, illumined one. This is where the Illuminati get their title. They're illuminated from an angel of light. This is where Albert Pike taught about the Freemasons, where it's a Luciferian doctrine. But in their eyes, Lucifer is the good guy and Adonai is the bad guy. And you can get online and type in Lucifer Mass. And in Italy, 2 years ago, I listened to an altar boy sing about Lucifer, the Christ. But they don't know any different. Why? Because the new Bibles take Lucifer out and put Morning Star in. Ezekiel 28, you'll see that this is the anointed cherub. There were originally five, there's now four. Ezekiel 28, verse 14. 15, thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. His iniquity, I'm going to exalt myself above the stars of God. I'm going to sit on that throne in heaven. I'm going up. Wish upon a star, I'm the star. Okay, look how God takes the words out of his mouth in verse 17. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty, and thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. Angel of light. God says, I will cast thee down, or cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings and nations that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities, by the iniquity of thy traffic. That's an interesting word. Trafficking, drug trafficking, human trafficking. King James only word. Therefore will I bring a fire from the midst of thee, it shall devour thee. A fire from the midst of, very unusual thing. That is a strange phenomenon that can't be explained. It's called human combustion. There have been testimonies of people, say, sitting in their car and they just burn up. It's obviously very rare, but it is a weird thing. So then he says, therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee. Now he reverses the I will here, so we're not going to count that one. And then he says, I will, there's number three, bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. And all they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Thou shalt be terror, and never shalt thou be any more. So we have in verse 17, I skipped 16. By the multitude of thy merchandise they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stone. So I got five, all five of them there. So Satan says, I will go up five times. God says, I will take you down. Now, the devil, being an anointed cherub, three heavens, third, second, first, earth, bottomless pit, hell. He gets fired or demoted five times throughout history. Kicks out of heaven, third heaven, to the second heaven. During the ministry of Jesus, Jesus said, I beheld Satan fall as lightning. So that's down to the first heaven. First heaven is what we call atmosphere or air. So in our age, Ephesians 2, he's the prince, the power of the air. In the tribulation, he has a battle with Michael the archangel. Michael kicks out him out of the first heaven to the earth. 1 Peter chapter 5, he's walking on earth seeking whom he may devour. At the end of the tribulation, he is degraded down to the bottomless pit, Revelation 20. He is let out of the bottomless pit in Revelation 20, verse 7, 8, 9. He is thrown back into the lake of fire. And when he gets fired from his job, so he gets five degrading steps down. Okay, so that idea, okay, of him wanting to get above the firmament, we obviously know nobody has those desires. Okay, in Ezekiel 1:26, the throne is above the firmament, so the throne of God is there, and he walketh in the circuit of heaven, circular of heaven. Okay, and the cherubims are right under the firmament. Okay, and so if you would, in Genesis chapter 11, does man ever get together to try to hit that firmament? Genesis chapter 11. Tower of Babel. Okay, who's the head leader of this group? It's not named, but it's pretty well understood if you run a genealogy. This would be Nimrod. Okay, Alexander Hislop wrote about Nimrod in Two Babylons. Nimrod was the 13th from Adam. Coincidence. Okay. Who was the 7th? Enoch. 7th from Adam. Coincidence. Okay. Noah, 10th from Adam. Number for Gentiles. So we got the 13th. Nimrod, descendant from Ham. Okay, so Nimrod gets the world together. He was known as a mighty hunter, used leopards to hunt with, trained leopards to hunt with, according to historians. That would match the leopard of Revelation chapter 13. So we got Nimrod. So what are these people trying to get together to do? The whole earth was of one language, one speech. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east. They found a plain in the land of Shinar. Shinar's Babylon. And they that dwelt there, and they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them throughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And for they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. Oh, what are they wanting to do here? And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad from the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men built. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did therefore confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. That's where United Nations, all one world unity, New World Order. If you're going to put the New World Order in a origin, there's a good spot right there. So, but their idea was they may reach unto heaven. And God says, no, you've messed up this world. I'm not going to let you mess anything else up. You're kind of confined. You're going to stay here. You know, how do you know we don't have Star Wars? Because we'd mess up all the other planets, if there's such a thing. Who knows? And so the goal of Lucifer, Second day, devolved to Leviathan. His goal, his motivational drive is, I'm going to get on that throne. And at the Tower of Babel, Nimrod, this world unity, United Nations. You go to the UN, boy, you could feel the vibes. Okay, what is their goal? To overthrow God. But they got a problem. How do they get through that dome? How do they get above that firmament? And that's an interesting thing that we can run through. So if somebody would pass these out, and what I've done is I've created a timeline. This is from my studies. I created a timeline. A lot of times when you have a timeline, you can see the deception through time. If you look at your currency right now, it's kind of hard to see the deception. But I have currency from Abraham Lincoln's administration, from Woodrow Wilson, from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, from Truman, from Kennedy, LBJ, and today. And when you lay all this currency out, you could see, oh, I see what they did. But when all of us are in this little time capsule, we don't see it. So if this time, this is the understanding that I have on some of these issues, okay? So a timeline. From Adam to 1500 AD, ancient civilizations, Gentiles and the Hebrews, taught a flat and stationary earth with a dome over it, with foundation pillars and prisons under it. Now, the heathen didn't teach about the prisons below it. They didn't want to think the idea. But the Hebrews did. They called it Sheol. So that's what they taught. In 500 BC, the first guy that came up with the idea of the earth being a sphere was Pythagoras. Now, I'm going to go back to that guy and use his theorem on a sphere. So Pythagoras, he was contemporary with Plato, Socrates, Aristotle. But his idea of sphere didn't go anywhere. The guy was a cave dweller, really odd character. 2,000 years later, a fellow named Nicholas Copernicus published a manuscript describing his ideas about the spherical earth and the heliocentric hypothesis. He was afraid to publish it, but he published it with the approval and the encouragements of the Jesuits and the Catholic hierarchy. Martin Luther, John Calvin, and many Protestants preached against it, said it was heresy. Okay, and they really opposed it. So a few years go by, Charles Darwin shows up. Charlie Brown. The Origin of the Species. If you don't know the full title of the book, there it is. Can you see the title of that? That would give credence to Adolf Hitler, would it not? And Karl Marx wrote a complimentary letter to Charles Darwin about his book, and Darwin did not want to use that complimentary letter because that would be a bad idea. Okay, and then Westcott and Hort were proponents of Charles Darwin. That would be the two main characters of the New Bible starting in 1880. Okay, time marches on. Daniel chapter 12, verse 4 says, in the end days, transportation and communication will exceed in their amazing. And just in our lifetime, the transportation communication, amazing. I am so grateful for Al Gore, for the internet and everything. Okay, now there's a very instrumental man in 1926 came about. His name was Richard Byrd. At the time, he was a lieutenant. He and a pilot named Floyd Bennett attempted to fly over the North Pole region. They have a diary, and it's really strange. I don't know what I believe of it. I mean, they're talking about a hole up there. They're talking about a favored race inside, and, you know, I don't know about that. Okay, and the year later, a Jesuit, George, okay, and then Edwin Hubble published separate works, okay, about a theory of an expanding universe. Okay, in 28 to 30, Richard Byrd got promoted. He became a rear admiral, the youngest man ever to attain that feat by a special act of Congress. Okay, and he took an expedition to Antarctica. with two ships and three airplanes, and he was a 33rd degree Mason, financed by those two men. Rockefeller's one of them. So things are going to really progress here. In 31, a Jesuit, the same guy up there a few bit earlier, invented or came up with the idea of the Big Bang. That is a relatively young idea. And the Pope was very happy and delighted that a Jesuit came up with the idea. Okay, in 33 to 35, Byrd established on his second expedition to South America, he established the first Antarctic Lodge. 82 members of his crew, 60 were Freemasons. Okay, at the same time, 38 to 39, Nazi Germany was sending expeditions down to South Pole, and they claimed a certain territory for them. This was their third German Antarctic expedition. And rumor or intelligence was telling that they were establishing a hideaway place in case they lost the wars, where Hitler and people can go there to hide away. And they were going to come through Argentina. And some people think that he actually went to Argentina. Faked to death. I don't know. Okay, and so I do know that Argentina received many Nazi leaders through the Vatican. Okay, then Admiral Byrd took his third expedition down to Antarctica, financed by the United States government. In 39 to 45, World War II, Werner von Braun was a Nazi aerospace engineer. He designed the V-2 rocket. That's very significant. Okay, if we turn it over, 1945, now things are really moving. 1945, you've got Nazi Germany lost. What are you going to do with all those scientists? The Joint Chiefs of Staff established the first secret recruitment called Operation Overcast. I give you these names so that you can research them if you wish. That assisted German scientists and families after the war. In 1946, President Truman secretly approved Operation Paperclip. That one's readily can be researched. And they recruited 1,600 German scientists, engineers, technicians for government employment. German meaning Nazis. Werner von Braun was one of those men. 46, 47, Admiral Byrd's back down in the cold climate. Operation High Jump. Strange name. He might be trying to jump on that wall to go find something. Okay, and so this is his fourth expedition down. 13 ships, 6 helicopters, 6 flying boats, 2 airplanes, seaplanes, 15 aircraft. For what? Because they thought Nazis were down there. And a high intelligent UFOs. That's what they were thinking. A few years go by, 55, 56, Admiral Byrd's final expedition down Antarctica, codenamed Operation Deep Freeze, established a military permanent military base. 57, Byrd dies. Mysterious death. He dies. You can find interviews on him on TV. They're black and white. 58, NASA is established. NASA teamed up with Walt Disney to sell the space travel to the public. 33rd degree Mason complied. John Parsons and Ron Hubbard, I just put them in there. I might show a video on them, who were occultists under the influence of Aleister Crowley, were rocket engineers and forerunners of NASA. 59, the Antarctic Treaty was established. Now there are 57 nations have signed into this treaty. Only people that go down to Antarctica are military or under their surveillance. Here's where it gets real strange. In 1961-62, the United States gets into the game. Russia had already done this. Operation Fishbowl. The idea is they call it Fishbowl because they feel like they're in a fishbowl. What did they do? 31 different times they sent up nuclear warheads straight up and exploded them, trying to penetrate
that dome. They did it late at night. Soviet Union had done this. Both of them came to an agreement. Man, we can't. And Soviet Union discontinued it. United States, you can find it. Operation Fishbowl is part of Operation Dominic. So they realized, okay, we're stuck here. So then began the pretended space race to distract everybody. Who's going to get there? Who's going to get there first? Who's going to get to the moon first? Who's going to go there first? Who's going to get through the thing? Okay, and so according to history, there are 6 moon missions, okay, that were under one president's administration. Good old honest Richard Nixon. Okay, so that's interesting. And I have on this one, I get a lot, you know, probably another 30 minutes worth of videos. But what I'm doing is I'm going to take their authority to let them tell us. Once in a while, they do tell the truth. Okay, and so I don't know if I'm going to do the first one, but the first one is taped conversation with Donald Rumsfeld, Henry Kissinger, and Richard Nixon with his secretary in there. And his secretary lets the cat out of the bag what they were doing a few years later, because I think she didn't as fear for her life as much. So I don't know. I'm going to start showing some of these, and if I get going too long and you get bored with it or don't care about it, I don't, you know, whatever you want to do. Okay, so this one is President Nixon. A person might say, how can they lie to us like this? You can trust Jesus Christ, you can trust his word. And you can get involved in politics, and you should, but don't put any hope in it. Okay, and so I'm using their evidence. This is the former secretary of Richard Nixon.
It's an incredible story. Newly elected, Nixon was up to his neck in the Vietnam War. He needed a big stunt to reverse his negative image with the American public.
President Nixon was on the telephone, speculating. He kept fiddling with the telephone cord. The Oval Office was in semi-darkness, and I found it very difficult to take notes of this meeting.
Had a meeting and talked, and he had made a number of decisions.
We know how honest Donald Rumsfeld was, right? Weapons of mass destruction.
It's already. Basically to try to calm things down.
The director of the CIA was looking panicked. He always overestimated the power of the Soviets. The Russians will put a man on the moon. It's only a matter of months, maybe even days. I have very accurate information about that. We can't wait another year. We have to launch Apollo 11 as soon as we can.
I was on the telephone constantly and at meetings and various other ways trying to promote more energy, more aggressiveness in this matter.
I said to the president then, I said, you can't let this succeed, and you must do everything necessary to make sure that it doesn't.
Now the president turned to his experts at NASA and said, are we ready? The director of the space agency only half reassured him. He said, we might not be able to send back films of the first steps on the moon. Well, President Nixon refused that idea. No way. The whole world is waiting to see an American take the first steps on the moon.
He was very upset about it, and that he felt that something had gone wrong and maybe he was responsible.
The President of the United States was irate.
The sequence of events I remember as the most tense.
Then one of the presidential advisors, I don't know, General Alexander Haig or Donald Rumsfeld, said hesitantly, what if we film the first steps on the moon in a studio? Then if we fail, we can always show those pictures to the public.
I talked to the president, and Kissinger supported it.
And at first I didn't take it very seriously, and I was told not to take it very seriously. Then it kept going on and on and on.
The president was prepared to do so, and I was prepared to support that.
And that was decided basically by Henry, Al Haig, and the Secretary of Defense.
But in the last analysis, the only person who could make the decision to do A, B, or C is the President of the United States under our system. And he would have to order it done.
Nixon settled back in his chair and closed his eyes for a few minutes. And then he stood up and said, "Gentlemen, you have less than 2 weeks to get everything prepared."
That was big. That was a big idea. It was an important thing, and a lot of effort went into it. It was an anguishing decision for President Nixon to make.
And I think he made the right decision.
He was the president, and he deserves the credit for having had the courage to do it.
He did that on his own. Sensible thing to do.
Then he came over to me and picked up all my notes, ripped them up into little pieces, and threw them in the wastebasket.
No stage in my life could I ever have anticipated that this would happen. And no stage, not even when I was made National Security Advisor. And I think it is a great symptom of the strength of America that this was even conceivable.
I thought it was the right thing to do because we have to do something to show that we're still the United States of America. We walked out of the room, and President Nixon said, "I've decided to do that, and I need you to do this job. We're going to do it." It was just amazing. So we were trying to figure out who would do what when. He simply has got to have the person he wants in that job. And it has to be someone who's capable of doing it. And it has to be somebody he knows well. I said, "I'd like to talk to one person." And he said, "Who?"
Donald Rumsfeld was the first to propose Stanley Kubrick. The film would have to be perfect, but the set could never be built in time. The filming of 2001, A Space Odyssey, was drawing to a close in a suburb of London. Why not use the sets there? Rumsfeld was sure that Kubrick would not refuse. During the Kennedy administration, the White House had granted him special authorization to access strategic areas of the Pentagon during the preparations for the film Dr. Strangelove. Kubrick owed them. I told Mr. Nixon, "It's very dangerous to lie in the United States. You can't pull a con like that in a democracy. Too many people would talk. It would be absurd." But he said, almost sadly, "Go ahead anyway." Rumsfeld offered to go and negotiate personally with Stanley Kubrick. He and Henry Kissinger flew to England that same evening. Kubrick was surprised and amused by the idea, but began by refusing. Rumsfeld wouldn't give up. "We're only asking you to do one thing. Just leave us the keys to the studio for one weekend, just so we can shoot a bit of film and take a few shots. Everything will be tidied up again by Monday morning." Kissinger flattered him, telling him that Dr. Strangelove was one of Nixon's favorite films. In the end, Kubrick agreed. The fake footage would be shot in England in the MGM studios near Boreham Wood with a skeleton crew. The two technicians and two actors would be CIA agents. To guarantee their trustworthiness, all had to be single men without family ties. They would sign a contract committing themselves to perpetual silence about the whole affair. Once the filming was over, they would have to disappear. But Stanley Kubrick was a perfectionist. Faced with the CIA crew's lack of professionalism, he ended up, against his better judgment, supervising the shooting of the fake moonwalk. "But," he told them, "from Monday morning, you're out of my life for good."
My goodness, that is somebody.
Okay, next one. This might be the first steps.
I'm going to step off the lamp now. It's one small step for man.
No idea. Yeah. I was talking to
a giant leap.
Guys the other day, and he was trying to explain to me. Speed drops.
Look at all that moon Mars.
Takes my shoe.
Okay.
Let me see your shoe. He takes my shoe. And he goes, "Now, if I throw this up in the air, it's going to come down. But if I throw a hard one, it will escape the pull of the gravity of the Earth and once..."
Okay. If Let's try this one.
Armstrong never went to the moon, and there's so much evidence. There's three or four books out, three or four videotapes. The one guy here that made a videotape on Stanley Kubrick, I'm trying to think of this guy's name. I think it's Wiegand or something, but a very knowledgeable guy, and did a couple videos on.
See the wires? That's how they fake the ISIS, ISS, International Space Stations. It's wires. And I have a couple of footages of that.
How Stanley Kubrick faked the moonwalking. And then just recently I saw a video on the web that has Stanley Kubrick saying exactly who asked him to fake the moonwalk. He said, President Nixon asked me to come to the White House. He said that there was no way we could go to the moon and we couldn't disappoint the public. And would I be able to fake the moonwalks? And the reason they picked Stanley Kubrick is because of the work he'd done on the 2001 movie, Space Odyssey, and, and how great it looked. And so he went to London. They used a studio in London, and he did all the fake moonwalks there. And both Stanley, now the...
Okay, if you did something, okay, like right after high school, I took a motorcycle trip out west, 6,000 miles, did it in 16 days. If somebody said to me, would you swear in a Bible that you did that motorcycle trip? No problem. I'll give you this $100 if you swear in a Bible you took that motorcycle trip. Man, give me the money. Neil Armstrong. Now this guy has done this to about four or five of them. And watch the reactions.
Mr. Armstrong, Bart Sibrel, ABC Digital. Wanted to give you the opportunity to swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon. Will you put your left hand on the Bible and swear to God that you walked on the moon?
Gentlemen. Mr. Sibrel.
Yes? If you really walked on the moon, why would you not do that? So why don't you just put the end to the record in the argument and put your hand on the Bible, swear to God you walked on the moon.
Mr. Sibrel, knowing you, that's probably a fake Bible.
Really? Well, no, it's a real Bible. You have the opportunity to have $5,000.
Here he's offering him $5,000.
The meeting is not open.
Well, you have $5,000 cash. You can give it to charity if you swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon.
Please, I have a tape. That'd be fine.
Why don't you swear to... Why not? Why won't you do it? So why don't you put your hand on the Bible and swear to God that you walked on the moon?
Mr. Sibrel has made a fool of himself in front of the world. Mr. Sibrel, you do not deserve answers.
Good old Buzz had a little bit different reaction.
Why don't you swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon?
Please.
Why don't you swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon?
I'm not trying to get
you to tell him to get out of here.
This is a hotel.
We'll call the police.
We pay.
Come on in here. We'll call the police.
You like that? Why don't you swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon?
Sir. I don't. I have nothing to do with this. But
okay.
You cannot solicit on this property.
We just paid to rent out the penthouse to shoot up there. So
you can't solicit like this on this property.
Keep.
All right. Well, then I go through my measures.
Yeah.
You got to keep shooting, man. Okay. Well, you can put it on your shoulder. Don't be shy. You're the one who said you walked on the moon when you didn't. Calling the kettle black, if I ever thought of it. Saying
will
I
you
misrepresented
get it
myself.
Away from me?
You're a coward and a liar and a thief.
Ouch. Okay, here's NASA employees. Okay, look at their symbol. Does that look like a forked tongue? There are five stars. They're upside down crosses. If you look at them real close, right there, 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 and there. This is an ancient symbol of an eternal snake. And then look at the names of Apollo. You know where that's found in the Bible? Revelation 9:11. Get that number, 9:11. Apollyon.
Repeatedly that we can't go into deep space because we no longer have the 60s technology that we used to get to the moon.
Right now, we only can fly in Earth orbit. That's the farther.
Now, they're hanging. They got wires. They're hanging there. They're not in gravity-less or whatever. You can see that they're.
We can go.
The kinds of technologies that we're testing out on Space Station are definitely helping us with our goals of going beyond low Earth orbit.
Early in the next decade, a set of crewed flights will test and prove the systems required for exploration beyond low Earth orbit.
And this is really the beginning, I think, of human beings leaving low Earth orbit.
She has her hair hairsprayed so it looks like it's floating. I mean,
I'd go to the moon in a nanosecond. The problem is we don't have the technology to do that anymore. We used to, but we destroyed that technology, and it's a painful process to build it back again.
I haven't seen anything that indicates the telemetry data is even in existence, and as I said, even if we had it, we don't have the machines to play it back.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid I can't really give you much of a clue as to where this data ended up and whether it still exists or not.
See? Can't go past lower.
They say they lost the data. Okay, let's see.
Here is actually Tim's fault. His hand breaches the 3D mic floating in front of him. We all know NASA
watch
uses wires, and sometimes
see
he'll catch
wire?
Him like this here. The guy pulled on his wire.
Watch right here. He'll
However,
grab the wire.
However, some days when you're filming live, things
right
just
here.
Don't work out.
See the wire?
It becomes so blatantly obvious, it's ridiculous. So, in this clip, they're talking live feed, and wouldn't you know, we have a astronaut go by us in the background, obviously trying to give it a more realistic, spacey, station, busy effect. The only problem is the camera that was supposed to mask this harness out, or the video feed, is not working. And so we see the guy come flying along in a harness on his wires. Pretty amazing. But that's not all that goes wrong here. They're wearing augmented contact lenses so that they can interact with these 3D objects. Now, in this scene, the guy on the left in the green shirt, he thinks he sees an object in 3D space that's being broadcast to him. So he grabs it and he puts it off to the side. He's looking straight ahead because he's looking at an object rotating in front of him. But the video channel is down that is supposed to show the viewers what we're supposed to see. And so we don't actually get to see the object that he has seen. And I would just sum this up as a very terrible, bad, horrible day for NASA doing live feeds. You have been warned. This is very serious.
Okay, let's see. This is Jack Parsons, I mentioned. He's one of the founding fathers of NASA. A disciple under Aleister Crowley. Satanist, I think he eventually committed suicide. Okay, on the pretend ISIS, outer space, whatever, notice what these people are doing. Oops. Oh, I gotta back it up. I didn't get it in the right place. Right there.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing.
Are they saying two outs in baseball? Texas Longhorns?
He didn't exist.
This one's interesting. The Mars missions.
This guy's got pretty funny commentary.
Thanks. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Mars. That's right. I remember now. Curiosity is in Greenland. I know, sounds crazy. But I'm about to show you. So, come along.
What you are about to see is bizarre.
So there I was, just minding my own business, looking at Google Earth, and this big, snow-covered monstrosity is staring me in the face like, why is that covered in snow? I look into Ireland and some other areas around it, Iceland. Ireland gets snow only once a year, one day a year. So I keep digging a little bit deeper, and I finally get underneath this cloud cover here, and a few images pop up. And I say, oh, images, what are they? Well, this is what you got, which I'm sure that looks familiar to you, right? Looks just like the pictures they give us of Mars. So I'm just kind of creeping around here and definitely noticing the same kind of undulation changes and same kind of rock, same kind of dirt. Only thing that's missing is that nice little red tint that they pay somebody $150,000 a year to put on there. And then I see little things there. So, well, it's not Mars because they got some weird little tires and little ATVs over there. But I was just kind of looking around, see what we could find. Another one of those ATVs, some antennas set up. But those mountains, those rocks, definitely exactly like we see on Mars. So I said, hey, I wonder what they're doing out here. What is all this equipment for? I'm sure it can't be NASA, right? Whose orange Hummer is this? Okay, that looks like a NASA symbol. Well, let's dig a little further because I can't really see anything on here other than it certainly looks like a NASA symbol. And I can't read that. Tried. Cameras set up. Tents, ATVs, food. They've been there a while. It's not a one-day trip. Got their antennas set up out in the middle of nowhere in Greenland. Another ATV, a leveler equipment. So that was all that picture had. Let's see what this one's got. So this one here said roving the Arctic. So what is that? Doesn't make any sense. Pop in here. See if we can find anything. Again, same kind of mountains. That looks like the same kind of water I've seen before that I thought was water on Mars. Who knows? Zoom in, what's that? Oh, nothing. Just looked like it was funny. So I'll keep kind of going through here and see if it... What the... Yeah. So, I think I found out where Mars is, guys. It's just about 1,000 miles north of me. Not quite the distance that NASA says, but I can't find anybody who's in charge of this. They must be hiding behind these rocks. Oh, no, there they are out in front of everybody, just standing there. Lovely. Clown number one, clown number two, and clown number three. Gov, and look at all their Mars frauds. And check out those images. They're identical to these. Yeah, this is very empty here. Oh, there's one of those ATVs. All right, now we're on to something. Oh, I got another truck. Oh, yeah, it says NASA. What's that say? Mars Project?
Cheap, lying, no good, rotten, forest-blessing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating...
We won't continue that on because he kind of goes a little further. Okay. If you want to watch the time, this one is pretty dark. Okay, meaning how far will these people go? Does anybody remember the Challenger explosion? I remember where I was at, just like I remember where I was at where 911 occurred. I was at a farmer's place, we were chilling popcorn, and we get on TV and this Challenger exploded. And they said 7 astronauts were killed. 30 years later, can somebody be this deceptive?
Corliffe and 6 other members, Dick Scobie, Michael J. Smith, Ronald McNair, Ellison Onizuka, Judith Resnick, and Gregory Jarvis were all reported to have died that day. And of course they would have. The whole world saw, or at least would have heard, of the shuttle exploding in dramatic fashion. Now, the explosion was said to be caused by the erosion of the O-ring seals of the rocket boosters due to the unusually cold weather. These eventually disintegrated after takeoff and led to the explosion. Moving on almost 30 years, a conspiracy theory hit the internet in May of 2015, which suggested, with a very respectable argument, that the crew of the Challenger, or at least six of them, are actually alive and well today. Post shows recent pictures of individuals thought to be the same crew members, some with undeniable likenesses, along with information on their whereabouts and even their professions. Now, before I look at each individual crew member, it's worth mentioning that I do wonder why it has taken 30 years for this theory to emerge. This information, if accurate, must have been available for some time now. Some conspiracy theorists believe that there was no explosion at all, that the whole thing was fabricated. The same people would say that the moon landing, only 3 years before the space shuttle program began, was an elaborate hoax too. If there was an explosion that day, there must have been crew on board who perished. The real question here is, were the crew who died on board the Challenger the same crew of individuals the world had become so familiar with? Did NASA have doubts about the safety of the mission? Were they protecting these would-be heroes from a mission they thought to be too dangerous? And if the mission was a success, would they be heralded as heroes who weren't even there, having their roles played by a less important, disposable crew? These are all additional questions that came to me whilst wondering why NASA would want to cover up this case, if indeed they did. For now though, let's look at the alleged crew members. Francis Richard Scobie, or Dick Scobie, was commander of the ill-fated Challenger. He was a celebrated combat aviator during the Vietnam War, after which he was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, an award given in the US for heroism and extraordinary achievement during times of war. He also gained many other accolades over the years. His part in the 2015 conspiracy theory is supported by a photo of a man by the name of Richard Scobie, a chief executive working for a Chicago-based advertising agency called Cows in Trees. Looking at this image, there is no doubting the likeness, but it's worth mentioning that the likeness on the photos which appear on the agency's website are less apparent. Was the image that the conspiracy theory relied on manipulated? Possibly, but 30 years have passed and it's reasonable enough to think that it could be him. Michael J. Smith was named as pilot for the Challenger mission. In 1963, he graduated from Beaufort High School in South Carolina with a Bachelor of Science degree and went on to achieve a Master's in Aeronautical Engineering in 1968. He flew during the Vietnam War and was said to have flown 28 different types of civilian and military aircraft, logging 4,867 hours of flying time before joining NASA. His part in the 2015 conspiracy theory is supported by a photo of a University of Wisconsin professor by the same name. Now, according to the university's website, this man does exist, and there is no doubting the staggering likeness in the two photos, albeit 30 years apart. In fact, out of all of the supporting conspiracy photos, Michael J. Smith of Wisconsin holds the strongest likeness to his 1986 would-be doppelganger. In fact, the Michael J. Smith at the University of Wisconsin is thought to have been born in the same year as the astronaut. Another unbelievable coincidence, or just further proof that he is in fact the astronaut in question. Incredibly, two of the six crew members thought to be alive today are accused of lying about being their twin siblings. The first being Ronald McNair, and the second being Ellison Onizuka, both mission specialists on the Challenger. Ronald McNair graduated from MIT in Massachusetts, then became a staff physicist at the Hughes Research Lab in Malibu, California. Onizuka began duty with the United States Air Force in 1970, where he served as a flight test engineer and test pilot. Both men were selected by NASA for the astronaut program in 1978. Ronald McNair is said to have taken on the name Carl McNair, and Ellison Onizuka is now known by conspiracy theorists as Claude Onizuka. If you are to believe the conspiracy, both these men give lectures at universities under their new guises, lectures about their brother's rise to working for NASA from humble beginnings, both quite recently appearing at the University of Hawaii. Interestingly, a blogger by the name of Eowyn posted an in-depth report on fellowshipofthemind.com about both men and the results that ancestry.com had regarding the existence of their twin brothers. The results suggested that neither twin existed, as birth dates and parents' names yielded no definite results. Although this is not definitive proof of a conspiracy, it's interesting nonetheless. So are Carl and Claude the twin brothers of Ronald and Ellison, or is this just another lie in a NASA conspiracy? Now the case of Gregory Jarvis is an anti-conspiracy theorist's dream. In 1962, Jarvis graduated from Mohawk Central High School in New York. He was later bestowed with the honor of having the school named after him. He received a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. In 1977, she earned a PhD in electrical engineering at the University of Maryland. Soon after that, Resnick was employed by RCA as a design engineer, and later worked with various NASA projects contracted to the company. Now, there is a lot of information on a Judith Resnick, who is a law professor at Yale University, along with information on her years as a scholar studying at the New York University during the mid-1970s, as well as her work as an author. But at that very same time, Judith Resnick of NASA was thought to be 250 miles away in Maryland, going through a divorce, but soon to achieve a PhD from the state's university. In 1980, Professor Resnick joined the faculty of the Southern California Law School. It's said she remained in California for the next 17 years, which would place her in California during the time of the Challenger disaster. But the plot thickens. According to VeteransToday.com, following his daughter's supposed death, Marvin Resnick, father of NASA's Judith Resnick, moved to California from Ohio and collected $2 million from the manufacturer of the Challenger's O-rings, failure of which had been determined by NASA as the cause of his daughter's death. If this is the same Judith Resnick who worked for NASA, could this background information on her academic years be fabricated? If the conspiracy theory is fact, then maybe her now wealthy father moved to California to be with her. Again, as with all these cases mentioned here, the accompanying photo does look like it could be the very same person 30 years on. In 1970, Krista McAuliffe received her bachelor's degree in education and history from Framingham State College in Massachusetts, and then a master's in educational supervision and administration in 1978. She took a teaching position at Concord High School in New Hampshire in 1983. In 1985, she was selected to participate in the NASA Teacher in Space project, and, as mentioned before, was scheduled to become the first teacher in space. Next to Gregory Jarvis, I think the case of Krista McAuliffe is probably the most difficult for conspiracy theories to argue, as the accompanying photo's likeness is vague. However, there is a Sharon McAuliffe in Alberta, Canada, a professor at Syracuse Law, whose academic years are stated as being spent at the universities of Notre Dame and Syracuse. These alleged academic years place her well clear of the Massachusetts-based McAuliffe, but it doesn't mean that the information wasn't fabricated. The strongest argument here is that NASA's Krista McAuliffe's birth name was Sharon Krista. Again, it seems unusual that there is another person, again in a high-end profession, who holds an arguable likeness and goes by an uncannily similar name to the one NASA's McAuliffe was given at birth. Whether you are a non-believer, a skeptic, or a full-blown conspiracy theorist, there is no doubting that 6 of the 7 cases are unusual. Let's look at the facts. 2 of the said crew members are said to have twins. This alone is unlikely. 2 of them have identical names, and another 2 have extremely similar names to people still living today. On top of that, they all hold lucrative professions, as you'd expect of former NASA employees. With the case of Gregory Jarvis, there is absolutely no reason that at least...
I like how he did that. He didn't come right out and say it. He just gave evidence that he studied. If anybody's watched the rockets out of NASA...
Now, I use the word straight line because if you've ever been a fan of NASA like me, you've watched some launches and the rockets seem to turn sideways and then eventually start going back down towards Earth. And I'm just assuming that's where space is. Kind of like you have to go in a circle to get there. Well, every single rocket pattern that I've looked at from NASA is very similar. They all follow this rainbow-like pattern. Okay, it's really, really weird. Why are they going out over the ocean in this exact same pattern every time? Isn't space straight up? Well, that's what should be the case. Now, here's a funny little meme I came across. It says, NASA is firing rockets into the ocean. Shame if something should happen to the witnesses. And this isn't something I've looked into, but what if all the disappearances matched up with launches? And people saw where the rockets were going, and they vanished mysteriously because they were taken out. Okay, that's a cool conspiracy to look into. I've never looked into it. Maybe you could. But here is the video I was speaking of where amateurs launched a rocket. And these aren't...
It's interesting. Eric Carlson told me when he was on a ship in the Navy, they saw a rocket go off, and he said he could never understand why it went horizontal. Did he tell you that, Rick? Yeah. Now, these are some people that did send a rocket straight up, and it stopped at 73 miles. Don't know why.
Amateurs, in my book, these are professionals, and they launched a rocket, and again, it went in a straight line, and you're going to see why NASA doesn't launch their rockets in a straight line. Wow, have you ever seen a rocket take off that fast? I know I haven't. It seems like they take off in slow motion when you're watching the ones at NASA. I thought maybe it was some sort of illusion, but no, rockets can take off fast, and this one broke some records. As you can see, it is going way faster than any rocket you've probably ever watched. Okay? You're about to see why, again, NASA doesn't fire their rockets straight up into the air. They have to make them go out over the ocean in their rainbow pattern or rainbow flight path. And here's why. You're about to hear what this thing hits when it hits that man-made barrier. Listen closely. Did you hear that? There's that man-made barrier, aka the firmament. Let's watch this from two camera angles now. This is what surprised me the most. Boom. Okay, I'm gonna pause it right here. This is a side view. What you're seeing here is the horizon. It is as flat as you would never think it would be. Okay, this is what blew my mind when I was trying to make fun of flat earthers and they were saying, look here.
Okay, if you would look in Jeremiah 9. A person sees that and you kind of would get discouraged and basically say, who can you trust? Well, I know somebody you can trust. In Jeremiah, he is at the end of the reign of Judah. Judah's getting ready to be conquered. Here's what he said about the people of his day. Jeremiah 9:3. They bend their tongues like their bow for lies, but they are not valiant for the truth upon the earth, for they proceed from evil to evil, and they know not me, saith the Lord. Trust ye, or take ye heed, every one of his neighbor, and trust ye not in any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanders. They will deceive everyone, his neighbor, and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves to commit iniquity. Their habitation is in the midst of deceit. Through deceit, they refuse to know me, saith the Lord. Now, you see that sometimes you can get discouraged, but you can be very encouraged. Because as it was in the days of Noah, and what was in the days of Noah? Well, the Tower of Babel. So it became in the sons of man. So the space travel, whether a person believes it or not, at least somebody is going after God. That's the bottom line. And a person can believe them, they don't have to believe them, but one thing you can believe, and you can believe that book. Okay, we'll stop there. Sorry for the length of time on that.